Welcome back to The Beatles Rare and Unseen. After the Beatles' performance in Japan, they set out for a series of concerts in the Philippines, completely unaware of what was about to take place. Again, Beatles tour manager Tony Barrow.
It was a kind of out of the frying pan into the fire situation, but we didn't realize it at the time. We went directly from Tokyo to Manila in the Philippines. Most people, and certainly our concert promoter, were in fear and trembling of offending the presidential palace, President Ferdinand Marcos and his remarkable First Lady Imelda. It was really through misunderstandings between the promoter and us and the palace. The way it went was that our promoter put to the Beatles the idea that they might call in on the First Lady, call in at the presidential palace to meet the First Lady on their way to this massive open-air memorial stadium where they were going to play. All of us dismissed the idea of calling in on the palace at that point, not for any reason of being anti-president or anything like that, so much as the fact the Beatles wanted to get to the venue to see what the setup was, because they were really interested in the good sound and good lighting and everything else of their concerts, despite the fact that they were being sort of blown into the air, if you like, by the screams. Therefore, there was no question of that visit to the palace, that very casual invitation being accepted. And we left that with the concert promoter to get back to the palace. Apparently, he didn't do so.
The Beatles would learn that the invitation for lunch was with 400 children of the local aristocracy, their parents, and Philippine President and Mrs. Marcos.
And I remember hearing the commentator say words to the effect of that the Imelda Marcos, who was hosting the occasion, had said, "We are very busy people. We can't wait around like this. We haven't. The Beatles may have all day to spare, but we haven't." And we actually saw the place cards for the four Beatles at this elaborate luncheon table being lifted away and the places cleared. We had no idea, of course, that it was on a formal level like that, or we would have done something about it.
Upon returning to the hotel and seeing the apparent snub reported on Philippine television, the crew realized the extent of the damage.
I immediately got in touch with the television news desk and got them to send a crew to the Manila hotel, and while they were on their way, we drafted out a statement for Brian Epstein to read, explaining the situation, how this was not the Beatles' fault, nobody's fault at all, but a misunderstanding. We'd only got the gist of the idea of dropping in on the palace, not of attending a formal lunch. So Brian Epstein duly read this statement, and we watched later on in the evening when this went out on the news, and whilst the rest of the news programme, the sound was perfect, as soon as it came to Brian Epstein speaking, suddenly there was just a total interference. So by magic, his voice was wiped out.
The price for their indiscretion would be the disappearance of any kind of security provided by the government and local police.
We were waiting for gates to be opened so that our cars could go through, and the security guys who should have been standing there to open those gates just weren't there anymore. It showed itself on the final day when we went to the airport in a number of ways, where the hotel staff suddenly disappeared on instruction. It just disappeared from view altogether, and we were left to load our own baggage to take to the airport. At the airport, the whole thing culminated then in thuggish groups of people, some of them brandishing cudgels, whatever you want to call them, makeshift weapons of one sort or another, and some firing pistols into the air in an extremely intimidating manner, and we were literally pushed and jostled around, and one or two of the roadies, for instance, went down having been kicked in the shins and this kind of thing. We all kind of formed, as far as we could, a protective shell around the four Beatles themselves and just scurried to the aircraft as best we could in this. But I remember we feared that there would be a bullet in our backs or in one of the Beatles' backs. I don't think we've ever been so pleased to sit back on an aircraft as we were. And then the culminating factor were I was asked over the tannoy to, along with Mal Evans, please come to the front of the plane. We went to the front of the plane. We're taken off, And I was saying to Mal, OK, we're going to be the scapegoats. They're going to throw us into prison and we'll languish here until the next tour, if ever. But in fact, once they got us into the terminal buildings, all that they were saying was, you never entered the country, so we now have to make sure that you enter and leave by stamping both these pages of your passport. And we've never been so relieved. There was a little ripple of applause from our entire entourage as we took off from the airport there. And it was in the wake of that visit that George Harrison made the much-quoted remark when asked, where are you going next? What are you going to do next? George said, we're off to America next to get beaten up there.
The group would soon find out how true that statement was. Upon returning from the Philippines, an earlier comment by John Lennon that Christianity was dying and that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus led people in towns across the U.S. to burn their Beatles records. Lennon would, at first, make light of the situation by saying they had to buy them before they burned them. But he would eventually apologize for his remarks at a press conference just before the start of what would become their final concert tour. Musically, the Beatles continued to evolve as they released Revolver, their most ambitious album to date. Again, Phil Collins.
I think Revolver is my favorite album, even probably more so than Sgt. Pepper, because there are so many great songs on it. And I remember always loving I'm Only Sleeping, because, you know, they were doing all this backward stuff, you know, and it was very experimental with such Spartan equipment as well. But, you know, the backward guitar thing, that became the melody. You know, and Tomorrow Never Knows, all those things became melodies, and they were all like random tape things, but it was just quite rare that that kind of stuff happens, you know. And I mean, it's amazing to think that all that happened in such a short period of time as well.
I look at all the lovely people. Picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Rigby died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came, Father Mackenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong?
Late in 1966, the group began recording Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It was the definitive celebration of all things hippie and psychedelic. The Beatles, far more than just a famous band, had become spokespeople for a generation.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. Look for the girl with the sun in her eyes and she's gone. a rocking horse, people eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drip past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you away. Climb in the back with your head in the clouds and you're gone. With plasticine pauses, with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile, the girl with kaleidoscope
The Beatles' course would be dramatically altered in the late summer of 1967. Manager Brian Epstein, who'd been prone to depression and suicidal tendencies, died of an accidental drug overdose at the age of 32. One of the main driving forces behind the Beatles' success was now gone. The BBC's Steve Harley.
The reason that Lennon eventually turned against Epstein and what he stood for was that he didn't want to be in the Fabs anymore, the mop tops. The suits, which were basically a uniform. He didn't like uniformity, of course he didn't. He was a wayward character. Deep down, a sort of a folk singer in his own way, John Lennon, and very introspective. Whereas McCartney was more upbeat, was more optimistic, and you can see that in the music for sure. And that's why, of course, they would have gone their separate ways, and why the Beatles eventually had to split. These were such powerful individuals with such amazing creative talents and powers. The two couldn't, how long could they have worked together? Only for a very short period at the beginning of it all, wasn't it?
Moreover, the Beatles were becoming more individualistic. Critics and even fans would come to view the Beatles as Lennon and McCartney. The two had indeed composed most of the Beatles' tunes. Nonetheless, George Harrison, who had himself become more prolific and skilled as a songwriter, was beginning to resent his junior status. The so-called Third Beatle.
There is a force that brought Paul and John together at that Village Fete one afternoon. Now that's interesting enough. And then a few days later, a few weeks later, Paul pops along with his little mate, George. Now how weird is that? They say miracles only happen in the Bible. George, right through from the beginning. If I needed someone, don't bother me. Early Rubber Soul type period, Beatles for Sale period, George was writing great three-minute pop music already. Then later on, Revolver, you've got Taxman, Within You, Without You, and a couple of what you can, classics by any songwriting standards at all. Something, and Here Comes the Sun. Anyone who can do that. And then he was the first to release a solo album, you know, in 1970 after the split. And that was he prolific or what? It was a triple album, All Things Must Pass. And most of that stands up today. While My Guitar Gently Weeps, he wasn't just the third Beatle.
Ringo Starr was often the calming influence. Ringo, as John Lennon once put it, was the underappreciated soul of the group. Some did not agree.
People on the periphery will tell you, oh, well, you know, Paul described all the drum patterns to Ringo. Paul was really the best drummer in the Beatles. Well, that's not the way I've heard it, and that's not the way I believe it at all. Ringo, to musicians, is up there. In the pantheon of great rock drummers, Ringo has a seat.
Genesis drummer and lead singer Phil Collins.
But Ringo, fantastic drummer. He came with a lot of stick, you know. I mean, there was a period when, in the 70s, I think, probably, when, you know, people like Buddy Rich were saying Ringo couldn't play, and everyone was sort of thinking it was very simple, but it just wasn't. If you listen to the drum fills on Strawberry Fields Forever or A Day in the Life, I mean, it's just staggering what he did, you know. And he didn't ever do anything that you would normally do. You know, it's not the kind of thing that a drummer naturally sits down to play like that. And he would just play these very complicated, tricky fills naturally. And so, you know, I've got a lot of respect for him as a drummer.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Field. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding.
The story of the Beatles has been told in many different ways, but certainly none more interesting than a new DVD about to hit the market. The Beatles, Rare and Unseen, is filled with previously unseen home movies, photographs, recently rediscovered film, and true stories told firsthand by the people who were there. Many of the same people heard in this very show. If you're a collector, you're definitely going to want to check this out. It's in stores everywhere. If you want more information, just go to liberationentertainment.com. That's liberationentertainment.com. We'll return with more of the Beatles, Rare and Unseen, in just a moment.